Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thanks for listening today. You might not know it from the tone of my voice, but there's a question mark at the end of the title of our Project Milwaukee series. It's Wise Today, Well Tomorrow. Gail Conop-Baker would certainly fall into the category of wise today. The Madison writer has long been conscious of living a healthy lifestyle. She's an exercise enthusiast, a natural food fanatic, and even married to a doctor. A few years ago, Baker had just finished work on a novel, her kids were all in school, and then she found out she had breast cancer. Instead of revising her novel, Baker spent the next year living through the experience and turned it into her memoir, Cancer is a Bitch, a book that's as funny as it is moving. Gail Conop-Baker is with us in the Lake Effect studio now. Great to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why did you turn this story into a book? Why did you feel that it should be a book about you?
I never meant to. I completely accidentally wrote this book. I never meant to be a memoirist, and I never meant to launch my career with a memoir. And in fact, what happened is that I was a novelist who had not been published. I had one novel on submission with an agent, and I had just finished my second novel that was about a woman who finds a lump in her breast and wonders if she's not sure if she has breast cancer and now wonders if she's lived a meaningful life. I sent that novel that I thought would launch my career off to my then agent, and 2 weeks later, I went in, had my mammogram, was diagnosed with breast cancer. Yeah. So then, in the meantime, I didn't tell my agent, who was 25, and I thought, I don't want to tell her I have breast cancer. You know, I don't want to say anything, and I'm waiting for my results. And in the meantime, while I'm waiting for my results, I get an email from her, and she says, I don't really like that breast cancer novel. I'm not really sure. I care whether that woman has breast cancer or not. So life was getting kind of strange and converging, and, you know, that was the least of my problems. My real problem was that even after I had my surgery and they got it all out and I actually had the best prognosis I could have, I didn't bounce back the way I expected. I was really in a very stunned and panicked and paralyzed state of mind. And all I did was stare out the window and Google health sites looking for that perfect site that would tell me exactly what I could do to make sure I never had another recurrence. And I was like making, you know, batches of like organic facial creams because I, you know, I'd read about the toxins in all the lotions and stuff. And I was still vain enough that I wanted to put something on my face. I was doing that and just, I was not functioning that well. And so my husband came home one day and pressed this journal in my hand. And he said, you have to write this. And I was like, are you kidding? Like, who would want to read this crazy stuff? But finally, one day, I did sit down with that journal. And the first sentence, I just looked at this the other day, was, I'm sitting topless in the oncologist's office on Valentine's Day. Cancer is a bitch. After that, it just came flooding out. But honestly, I was writing it because I didn't want to burden any of my family or friends with these crazy thoughts. And now you can actually buy them in this book.
There's something of an irony that people would want to pay for these obsessive thoughts.
It was crazy. I mean, I was just letting it all out, and I had no distance from it. They were raw. They were intimate. They were just my deepest, darkest thoughts. And I didn't really know what it was I was writing. And then one day, I sent this thing that I wrote kind of into an essay to a couple writer friends, and they were like, wow, this is powerful. And it did feel powerful to me as I wrote it. I mean, my hand was shaking. I was crying. But I didn't know if it was powerful because it was me or if it was actually powerful. But I had that objective viewpoint from my friends. And then I still didn't know what I had written fiction. What was this thing I had written and who would want to read it? And then I read that Literary Mama was looking for columnists.
And Literary Mama is
an online literary magazine that's geared towards mothers, but it's like mothers of every kind of imaginable kind of mother. You know, it's not like your typical, it's not parenting magazine. It's pretty edgy and great. It's a great site. It's a great, really, it has poetry, has short stories, it has columns. So I read they wanted a columnist. They're looking for columnists. And I thought, I could maybe bear my soul about breast cancer and call myself bare-breasted mama. And I just pitched this idea, thinking, as a writer often thinks, they'll never get back to me. This is a little crazy. And they got back to me right away. And next thing I knew, I had a column. So here I was with this column exposing all these intimate thoughts and was a little nervous about that, but immediately got a ton of email from people, fan mail, comments, people saying, you're articulating what I have felt. And not just about the breast cancer, but about motherhood, about marriage, about midlife. That's really what kept me going. It seemed the more that I opened up, the more that it became a universal message.
Do you feel like you were already working through some of the questions that you were addressing by having written this novel in the previous year, year and a half, or however long it took?
You know, that's a great question, and I haven't really gone back to read that and see what it is that I was going through. That's a good question. I think probably I was. I probably was already pre-working through this thing about what it is to reach midlife and wonder about your life and wonder whether you made the right choices and whether you're living the way. I mean, the big question is, you know, what about those things I forgot to do? You know, what about when was I going to be that person I always meant to be? I think those questions were in there. I got to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure they were. And that is really where I was, what I was struck with.
The first thing I think people will notice about this book is that it's really pretty funny, at least in many places, it's really pretty funny. Is it a more personal book for you because it's funny?
You know, it's not that funny. It wasn't that funny to me writing it. Living through it was not funny. And when I read those passages that are particularly funny, like there was one someone mentioned the other day when I got through this list that we were talking about of things that I should or shouldn't eat, and I came up with, because everything was contradicting everything else, and I came up with two things I definitely knew I could eat and it would be okay, and it was like filtered water and organic green tea. Now, saying that is funny. But in that moment, when I made that discovery, it was like, oh my God, I can only have water and tea. That wasn't really that funny. So I think some of it's the honesty. I was just so open and honest about so many different things, and that came out funny. I think humor is often sort of that backside of pathos, isn't it?
To me, it's the tension between laughing and screaming.
Absolutely. And that's where I lived in that. I lived on that in that place for a long time through the whole book. Sometimes I think it's, you know, I read it and people laugh so hard. And I'm thinking, like when I say I want to be the Audrey Hepburn of cancer, I did want to be the Audrey Hepburn of cancer. At the time, I really, like, it wasn't that funny. It was like, could I be the Audrey Hepburn of cancer? How could I be more gracious and cool and carry this off better? Because I really felt like I wasn't. That's the funny part, is that I wasn't that at all.
Is your attitude towards the notion of preventive medicine different now than it was 5-6 years ago?
Well, you know, a lot of people have asked me that because they have said, well, why didn't you just say, well, you know, why bother? I had already been so healthy. But I guess I felt like, you know, as much as I was healthy, of course, there were things I wasn't that careful about. And I thought if there's one thing I can control, it's what I put in my body. And there's nothing else to control in this situation. I do believe exercise and all that is healthful. Do I live this perfect, healthful life? No. I mean, I couldn't travel. I couldn't do a lot of things. And there's a point when I was super fanatic, I'd say, for about a year. And then I've loosened up. I mean, I try to do the best I can, but I have loosened up enough that I feel like it's really important for your health to also be a part of the world and be living in it and be of the world. So if you need to go to a party, I mean, you don't want to stand there and just drink your filtered water that you brought. I mean, that's weird.
What good is it to live to 85 if you didn't have fun while you were doing it?
Exactly.
Breast cancer is mostly, not 100%, but mostly a disease that affects women, at least in the physical sense. Do you see men at your readings, and how has their reaction to this book been different than what you hear from women?
I haven't met any men with breast cancer, but I've had a lot of men at my readings for one reason or another. And I get a great reaction from men. You know, you look at the cover and it seems very female-oriented and it is about breast cancer. But I think I had a man in San Francisco and he was having surgery for melanoma that Friday. 40 years old, out of nowhere, healthy guy. And I read two passages and he was riveted. I could tell he was just sitting there really riveted. And he came up at the end and he just said, thank you. I feel so much less alone in my crazy thoughts. So I think it could apply to a man just like it could apply to a woman. I think it's about the human condition. Or it could apply to someone who's going through a divorce or who lost a job or who's had a, you know, some kind of devastating injury. Anything that knocks you down, I think these thoughts that I wrote and channeled and whatever I did are universal thoughts. I wouldn't have written the book otherwise. This really wasn't written to be that this is my journal. It was only written when I realized there was a universal message. And I thought of that as I was writing it.
The literal breast cancer and the metaphorical breast cancer.
Yes. Yes. And I hear from people who haven't had cancer or anything devastating who said they have cancers in their life and they could identify even with that part of it. I mean, I think you know, people suffer and people try to figure out how to live. I mean, we're all sort of figuring that out. Are we making the right choices? Are we living life as if it really matters? I always tell people, I said, I realize that this is my life and I should live it as if it matters right now and just, you know, take it all in as much as possible. So I hope that it'll inspire people to kind of take a fresh look at their lives and not have to go through the trauma that I went through in order to come through with some lessons that I got from going through it.
You mentioned before this that that your readings often have a sing-along component. How does that happen?
Well, I started reading this chapter. It's from early in the book, and it's about when I first got diagnosed. I mean, again, funny. People laugh hysterically. Living through that was not funny, but it was. I see how it comes across as funny because I was just so honest about how I felt and how, you know, people don't realize also, I'll get to the song part, but people don't realize that just because you've been diagnosed with some kind of chronic illness, that somehow they put you in this category as sick person and you're over here. Well, you're still that person who's thinking about that song from high school and all that stuff is all still in you. Every part of you that was there before is still there. And I think people are always a little surprised. They think you're just thinking about your appointment and, you know, and the surgery. And there's a part of that, but there's a part of you that's still trying to hang on to that other part. So anyway, in that section, this seems to read well, it ends with a song. My internal medicine doctor handed me a prescription for a Valium. They give you that often after you've been diagnosed because you go a little, you know, they just want to make sure you're calmed down. And I'm not a pill popper. But as soon as she handed me the prescription for Valium, I thought of that Rolling Stones song, Mother's Little Helper. So I wrote in the original version, I end that chapter with her handing me the prescription and me humming that song with the lyrics in the original version. And what happened is they made me take the lyrics out.
Not that you're bitter about that.
Yeah, not that I'm not upset. But so I had to take the lyrics out. And so I had to, you know, kind of cut it down. And it ends with me rattling the pill bottle against my thigh like a tambourine. But so when I went to read the first time, I like to be spontaneous. That's my stand-up comedy background. And I got up and I said, you know what? I think we should sing the song because they made me take it out and I'm a little rebellious. And it kind of worked. It was in San Francisco and, you know, they're open to stuff like that. And they all kind of sang with me. So I've kept it in the reading. It starts with, what a drag, it is getting old. I'm a terrible singer. See, that's why I need the sing-along.
Gail Connop-Baker, thanks so much.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Gail Connop-Baker's book is called Cancer is a Bitch, or I'd Rather Be Having a Midlife Crisis, published by DeCapo Press. Baker lives in Madison. Baker's book details her sometimes bewildering trip through the medical system and her attempt to rein in that experience by trying to focus on things that she had control over. She picks up the story for us.
I was going to another appointment, and I was going to bring the doctor a list of stuff and just make sure that I was doing everything I should do and not doing the wrong thing. So I decided I was going to make this big list here it was. I was going to make a list of keys to not being that 12%, meaning the 12% that would get the recurrence. So I made this list. I still have it on my computer. It's this crazy thing. And so here's my list. That I came up with. Eat only organic, even if this means I can't eat out or travel or leave the house if I'm hungry. Small price to pay for life. Number two, avoid animal fats or proteins. There's a theory that animal fat and possibly protein is one of the main culprits behind cancer. So no meat, no butter, no cheese, no ice cream, no ice cream, no ice cream. Number three, avoid sugar. Some sites claim sugar feeds cancer, something to do with fermentation. I wasn't always that scientific that I would just, you know, this is what I realized. So I think it is that. Maybe all sugar except a little chocolate. Chocolate has antioxidants. See, if I read something I didn't really want to do, I would come up with like a reason that it was okay. And chocolate always stayed in. Eat more superfoods. According to Stephen Pratt, there are 14 superfoods, beans, blueberries for breakfast today. I'm saying that. Broccoli, oats, oranges, pumpkin, salmon, soy, spinach, tea, tomatoes, turkey, walnuts, and yogurt. I cross out soy because I was told by my first breast surgeon in 2001, I had had a scare then, to avoid it since some studies show soy might increase the risk of breast cancer. And I cross out turkey and yogurt because I'm avoiding animal protein, which leaves me with 11 foods. Maybe only eat these 11 foods. Who needs other foods? Are other foods necessary? Look this up. Number five, except flax. Flax is in its own category of superfood, not on Stephen Pratt's list, but on many other lists. Flax is the superest of superfoods. Continue to sprinkle flax on everything. Number six, exercise more. If 30 to 60 minutes of exercise decreases my risk, wouldn't it make sense that 60 to 90 minutes would double that decrease? Every time I think about ice cream, exercise instead. I did do this and I lost quite a bit of weight. I really did. Number seven, meditate. I read that people who meditate have a lower rate of recurrence, although when I try to meditate, it makes my mind race faster, makes me want to check email and think about all the phone calls I have to make and errands I need to run. Work on that. Number eight, do more yoga, because I read that people who do yoga also have a lower recurrence rate, although I'm not sure if that means people who do yoga and meditate as separate activities or who meditate while they do yoga. I wonder if it counts that I do yoga mostly for the workout. I mean, I get the mind-body stuff, but mostly I want to sweat and stay flexible, and by the time we get to the Shavasana at the end of class, I'm already making lists in my head. What's up with all the lists in my head? Are the lists linked to the rate of recurrence? Check this. Number nine, live a more purposeful life. I read that people who have a sense of purpose live longer. Purpose. I thought my purpose was to write, but now I'm not so sure. In fact, writing has often made me feel not purposeful. The end product has such an uncertain life. After all, what is the worth of words and ideas stuffed in bins under my desk other than a waste of paper and space and time? Does a thought even exist if there is no one on the other side to receive it? Maybe I should do something with my hands. This is true. I always thought carpenters must feel purposeful. You know, they build buildings, you know, and like the master builder. I'm just adding this in. They make something useful. Maybe I should take up carpentry. Look into carpentry.
Gail Connop Baker reading from her book, Cancer is a Bitch, or I'd Rather Be Having a Midlife Crisis, published by DeCapo Press. There's lots more about Gail and the book on her website, and there's a link from ours, WUWM.com. There will be a lot more on how the internet is affecting the idea of wellness on tomorrow's show, our live broadcast from the Pabst Theater. We'll also talk about the notion that Americans are living longer than they've ever lived before, but that doesn't mean we're healthier. Plus, we'll talk about unorthodox ways to teach young doctors how to treat much older patients. And if you haven't heard about our live broadcast, all the information you need, including how to come see us, is on our website, along with an archive of our entire Project Milwaukee series. It's at WUWM.com. I'm Mitch Teich. Even if you can't be at the Pabst tomorrow, I hope you'll be able to tune in, and tune in every weekday at 10 in the morning and 11 at night for Lake Effect from WUWM HD, Milwaukee Public Radio. What a drag it is getting old. Life's just much too hard today. I hear every mother say the pursuit of happiness just seems a bore.